Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Andy. I needed to let you know that we are coming down to the wire on RebateJet.com. What's RebateJet? It's a platform I created for you guys, the small to medium-sized sellers trying to compete against those big brands with those big budgets. Go now to RebateJet.com, sign up for that free seller account before it goes away this month. Now, why do you want to be a part of RebateJet? Just a few things. You can list promo codes for free. You can offer 3 rebates free per day. You can list your products and sell them directly to our customers on our website. We even have a free liquidation marketplace for you to unload products that didn't work out. We also have something else crazy in the works. You guys are going to love it. Go now, RebateJet.com. Now onto the show.
Welcome to the Seller Roundtable e-commerce coaching and business strategies with Andy Arnott and Amy Wiese.
Can you give an example of a current product and how an iteration or an improvement on that design or functionality can open the door for a new patent? So in other words, like you were just talking about, you know, the dual-headed can opener, water bottle with a push button, opener or something like that. Can you describe, kind of how people can, I don't know if you can give an exact example, but, you know, how somebody can take a current idea, iterate on it, and then make and then create a new patent from that iteration.
Yeah, I'm usually terrible with these examples. Like somehow just coming up with them on the fly, it doesn't work so well. I think maybe I should clarify first what a utility and design patent is, though.
That was my question before this, and I changed it. We'll change it back. All right. Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
So just to clarify that, So a utility patent is what most people think of when they think of a patent. It's like you think of coming up with a new invention, a new product. It's like, hey, I found a better way to keep my dish soap from draining off the side of the counter, or what? It's a solution to a problem, and it's a structural solution. You have a product that has a different configuration, and that different configuration allows it to solve a problem that hasn't been solved before. That's typically what we're thinking of when we think of someone patenting an invention. And that's what a utility patent is for. It's for a product that has a structural difference for a functional purpose. And so something to know about utility patents is that they're rather complex. They involve a lot of words, a lot of description, because what we're really seeking to do with a utility patent is describe or define the territory of what the invention is. It's a shovel that has a top edge, and along the top edge is a notch or something like that. It's a very linguistic definition of what an invention is. And generally, utility patents are considered to be the strong type of patent because they protect the concept. Okay. Now, design patents are just about the way a product looks. Just about the ornamental appearance of it. So it's a product with a unique shape. Think of like a telephone that's shaped like a duck, right? Nothing about the way it functions. It's just that you happen to have made a telephone in the shape of a duck. And so that is what the design patent is all about. It's just about the appearance of the product. Design patents are relatively inexpensive because it's just about presenting the appearance. It's about drawings very carefully. Crafted drawings that show the product and show the design. So, and what I'm leading to with this, and this difference is kind of, an important reason why on Amazon, people tend to go for design patents. And that is, even though with utility patents, it was always considered to be more valuable because it's for a concept. And a design patent, on the other hand, hey, you change the appearance, it's not infringing anymore. But how do people knock things off on Amazon? They just copy it. They don't get that imaginative with how they come into your territory. They just have, they find a similar product on Alibaba and they just start selling it. So if the product looks similar, it will infringe the design patent. But more importantly, let's think about Amazon and how Amazon works. You know, you have people that are handling things at Amazon, and there are tens of thousands of workers, which are not using a very high level of discernment on how they make these judgments. So if you do an IP complaint on Amazon, and you say, let's say situation one is, here's my utility patent. if you read the claims of my utility patent, they seem to be, this competitor's listing seems to be fitting the definition of my product as defined in my utility patent. So they're infringing my utility patent. Please shut them down. So situation B, here's my design patent. Look at the pictures. Doesn't it look like my product? So which one do you think that they're going to respond to? You know, they respond to the design patent because they just have to look at pictures. And
I think that you brought up a really good point here, though, in that, you know, people often will say, well, I want to have a patent so that no one else can knock off my product or no one else can steal my idea.
Right.
But as you mentioned, Rich, a patent is only as good as whether you're willing to defend it and look after people who are, you know, going against your patent, right? Like doing something that infringes upon your patent or your claims. So, you know, I think there's a fine line in deciding, you know, what do you, I guess I'm interested in your opinion on that of,
you know,
whether you are, you know, I of course think it's a great idea to protect your ideas and protect your intellectual property, because in my mind, from a business standpoint, that is really going to help you sell your company one day for far more than you'd be able to have. You have no intellectual property, nothing that people can't just knock off and create their own copy of your brand, essentially. But what do you feel about the cost of defending your intellectual property?
Well, let me give it to you outside of the Amazon world first. So outside of the Amazon world, what I've always felt, and I'm not a litigator, I've always been involved in prosecution, helping people get patents. So my opinion on it always was, the reason you get a patent is not so that you can go and spend $1 million to defend it in court to enforce it. The reason you get a patent is because it keeps 80% of your competitors away, and it gets legitimate companies to play nice. They respect the fact that you have the patent. Like generally you won't have the bigger companies knocking you off. It'll always be the smaller pirates, the kind of the same black hat guys as act in the Amazon world. So there'll always be some people who will violate your rights, but it will keep 80% of the people away. It'll give you the leverage to make those deals with the bigger players, like the licensing deals or whatever other type of affiliate relationships you need to make. That's the reason you get the patent. And that's why I find people that have had the most success. That being said, if you have people knocking you off on a big scale and there's millions of dollars worth of damages, then it's good that you have the patent, because then it's worth suing and because you're going to collect that much more. But I'd say by and large, for most people, it's deterrent value. It's value as a deterrent that is the biggest justification for doing it. So that's outside of the Amazon world. But now this is where things have really changed with Amazon, in that, so the old days were like, okay, if someone's infringing your patent, you need to spend a lot of money to get an infringement action going. These days, you send an email to Amazon and you get them shut down. If your competitor is on Amazon, you do an IP complaint, you don't even need to get your lawyer involved. You just send them, here's the patent number, here's the listing, and they'll shut them down. And Amazon really seems to be deferring to IP owners. I mean, they seem to be shutting people down unfairly very often.
Yes, there's been some abuse of that lately.
Lots and lots.
Mm-hmm. This one guy in one category, he's dominating, he's just shutting everybody in his category down. And it's like Amazon's not catching on that it's the same email address that's making all of these claims and the same patent number and everything.
Yep. Well, here's the thing, is Amazon has been deferring to IP owners. You're an IP owner. They're basically giving you the benefit of the doubt. And so they are in many cases unfairly shutting people down and say the design, here's my design patent. And if it was in a court of law, it wouldn't be considered infringement, but Amazon is still shutting them down. I'm dealing with that all the time. But I think the takeaway is, it pays to be the IP owner. It pays to be the guy with the Amazon it pays to be the guy with the design patent, because they seem to be taking your side if you do. So yeah. A good reason to get patents these days is to be the one who has the patent rather than the one who's looking down the barrel at someone else's patent.
Yeah, absolutely.
True.
So Rich, real quick, can you give me a, going back to my previous question, can you give me an example of a product, you know, an iteration on a product that would be patentable and one that would not be, if you can do that? I hate to put you on the spot.
Oh, absolutely. So now that we've clarified what the difference between utility and design patents. So if you're iterating on a product and you give it a different appearance, you change it significantly, then it's a good candidate for a design patent. How much? It's really hard to say how much. It kind of depends on what the on the industry that you're in. Like in certain circumstances, in certain industries, like products are differentiated on rather minor details. But in other industries or in other types of products, where there hasn't been much variation, where maybe you just making yours cylindrical where every other one has been a cube, is enough of a design difference to be worthy of a design patent. When it comes to utility, when it comes to a utility patent, the type of difference, it needs to be a non-obvious difference. And it's debatable what that means, but that's the standard at the patent office, is whether it's the type of thing that one way of looking at it is does it fall within the range of what people know to do? So if it's, if it's a lock, like a combination lock, and so you have two dials instead of one dial. It's like, well, I mean, maybe not in combination locks, but in other types of locks and safe locks, there are others that have two dials. So would it be obvious to bring that from safes over into combination locks? Probably. So it's probably not enough of a difference. But in general, that's the type of difference that you're looking for. Something that's just a little, that's outside the ordinary. It's a little unexpected. And that's what unobvious is. And if you're talking about a utility patent, it should be a difference that's for a functional purpose. It makes it work better. It's like you add this little catch on the bottom of your soap dish, and now all of a sudden the soap doesn't slide off. Or you add some other little kind of gadget to something which allows it to solve a problem that that your competitors' products don't solve. And that's probably a good candidate for a utility patent. So, here's a little lesson to that too, is a lot of times people get carried away, and we're talking a bit about like whether you should do a patent or not, whether it's worthwhile doing a patent. This is an important thing that I think is that a lot of times people are looking at, hey, can I get a patent? Is mine different enough to get a patent? I'd say you want to look beyond that and say, is the thing that makes it different, does that matter to the market? Does the market care about that little catch that you're adding that keeps the soap from sliding off? Do your competitors care about that? Are they going to want to copy that feature in order to stay competitive with you? Because if they're not going to want to copy that thing that is the thing that can help you get the patent, then don't bother with the patent. Only patent it when there's an overlap between the thing that's patentable and the thing that matters to the market.
All right. That makes a lot of sense. So to me, it sounds like, if you're changing, you don't necessarily need to be changing core functionality, but you need to be making an improvement, right?
You need to be making an improvement, and it needs to be distinct. You know, the patent office doesn't look too carefully about whether it is better than before, but that there should be a functional reason to it, as opposed to you just you make it a different proportion or something, which it's hard to really justify that there's any functional purpose to, and then it probably would fall within the realm of obviousness, which kind of means that it's kind of within the range of how people might design this, even if they haven't thought to do it exactly like that before.
Okay, interesting. So real quick clarification on design patents. So You know, once again, let's go back to your example of like, you know, say you had, you know, somebody's got a patent on a can opener and you make a can opener that's very similar, but you add rubber grips to it and you do a design patent. Would that be a worthy design patent? And can the original owner of that utility patent come after you? How does that, you know, how do those two play together? In other words?
Okay. Yeah. A couple of very interesting things you hit upon there. The first one is let's dispel the notion that if you get your own patent, that means you're not infringing someone else's, because it's not true. It doesn't mean that, but that's a very common misconception, is that like, and it makes sense, right? It's like, hey, if I'm different enough to get a patent, that must mean I'm different enough to not infringe. It just doesn't work that way. And the way it works with patents is it's more like building blocks, where you have a patented invention that has A, B, and C, and then you add D onto it. You might be able to get a patent because D is a significant improvement, but in order to manufacture A, B, C, and D, you have to make A, B, and C. So you're infringing that other person's patent. So there's that. Let's just have that concept clear, that you getting a patent doesn't mean you're not infringing someone else. But now let's talk about adding the rubber grips onto it. With design patent, the way the design is presented is as black and white line drawings. So the materials are not indicated. So the fact that it's, say, rubber grips wouldn't distinguish it. But if those rubber grips actually made it look different, then it could be a different design. So it's not that it's the grips are rubber, but maybe that it's you've got an enlarged portion on each end of it, and that's where the grips are. So now it provides a different overall look to it. Then it could be a design patent. Does that make sense?
I think so.
It's funny though. It's like anything you say, like five issues come up for me.
And
like,
no, absolutely. That's why you spent so many years in law school, right? Because there's so many intricacies and you know, this stuff, you know, and not only that, but you know, you could go to one examiner at the patent office and they say, no, this doesn't work. And they go to another one and they say, yeah, it works. You know, being an ex federal government employee, I know exactly how that all plays out.
Right. Exactly.
So let's shift.
You just have to work the system.
Yeah, absolutely.
Work the system to your advantage.
Absolutely. Let's shift really quickly into, you know, more of the trademark world, because that's also pretty important for Amazon sellers. Let's start out with, like, do you have any suggestions, or I remember we had this chat when we were at SellerCon. In regards to brand names, you know, any tips on picking a great brand name, especially when it comes to Amazon?
Yes. So for the sake of trademarks, you want to have a name that's distinctive. So, and with trademarks, the way that a name or a mark is distinctive is the less descriptive it is of the product itself. So, you know, there's a high temptation to call your product red licorice, but that just describes what it is. It's red licorice. It's color. It's licorice. It's red color. Or to name your store on Amazon, pet food store, right? But that again is descriptive, and that's not trademarkable. It's not protectable when you have a descriptive name. So there's a real temptation to want to do that. But the most protectable names are the ones where you have a word that's not associated with the particular product typically. So like Apple computers. Before Apple computer existed, Apples had nothing to do with computers. And that was the grounds for very strong trademark. Similar as words like Kodak or Xerox, a made up term, very strong as trademark. So, and then, a little bit less protected, less protectable is something that's distinctive. Suggestive, which is a word like cornucopia pet food store, right? So cornucopia it implies plentiful. So it is somewhat associated with pet food, but it's not directly describing it. So that's a good trademark right there. And then notice what I did also is I put together cornucopia with pet food store, because you say, what's the best way to name a store? And it depends on what your aim is. If it's trademarks, you do what I just said, which is come up with a distinctive mark. But if it's for the sake of search, you do want it to be descriptive, right? Because you want people searching for pet food to find your store. So that's the compromise there, is to do both, is to have something like Cornucopia Pet Food Store. Now you have descriptive terms, which are going to help you show up in search, but you have something distinctive, which will then allow you to get it trademarked and allow you to get into brand registry. So my best tip on Amazon then is to take something distinctive and combine it with some terms which are going to help you to get that search traffic.
That's great advice. Thank you. Can you describe really quickly, because I know there's a lot of confusion with this, and I know that on Amazon, people never know what to do. Previously for Amazon, they would only accept word marks. Now they're doing design marks as well. Can you explain the difference between the two and maybe some instances where one would work better than the other?
Well, a word mark is for the term itself. Let's say like Cornucopia pet food store. Whereas a design mark is, let's say, Cornucopia pet food store with some type of stylized letters, perhaps some type of logo. So design marks are typically more akin to a logo, where a word mark is just for the term. And a word mark is really what Amazon is looking for brand registry. I think under certain circumstances, they'll accept the design mark. But the best bet is to file the word mark. Just get protected for the term, regardless of what style or what fonts people are using for it. And do a separate registration for a design mark. If you do have a very distinctive looking logo that you think people might copy as far as the style of it without necessarily using the same term or the same words, and then possibly you can do that as a secondary. But definitely for the sake of Amazon, do a word mark registration.
Yeah. And correct me if I'm wrong here, Rich, but for an example, for people to visualize this, a word mark would be something like the word McDonald's, and then a design mark would be the big M that is very distinctive. People know it and relate McDonald's to that, that logo.
Exactly.
So that wouldn't that be a good example of the two?
Yep, exactly. Okay. And the design marker then would be focusing on those stylistic elements of the M and the golden arches and all of that.
Right. Fantastic. So, Rich, I know that like when I filed my first trademark, it took like about 6 to 8 months. Now it seems like, it's taking up to a year, sometimes even longer. It seems like the process has really slowed down. Do you have any tips? I know besides, usually lawyers can get it done more quickly than things like LegalZoom and some of those services. Any other tips or any other tricks, tips or ways to get that mark through more quickly?
Yeah, well, I mean, let's not go too quickly past this. What you're saying though, in terms of if you make a mistake, if you're using LegalZoom or some service like that, then you might find yourself losing a year only to have to start over again. So, if the brand is worthwhile, if you have some traction with it and there's some value at stake, it probably pays to have someone do it that knows what they're doing. It's really not that much more. Now, as far as speeding up the process, it is possible to expedite a trademark application. I believe, I don't directly do the trademark filings. My colleague does. But I believe you could expedite it, but only if you're being infringed for the trademark. On the patent side of things, you can expedite patent applications with the payment of additional fees.
Okay, interesting.
But the main thing, though, I always caution people is, are you ready for it to be expedited? Because when it comes to the patent, a lot of times it's rather expensive to file. And let's say a year goes by and then we get initial rejection. And then it's worth fighting, but it's going to involve spending a bit more money. So if you expedite it and then it comes back around in just a few months with a rejection and now you have to spend more money, you might not be ready for that. So sometimes it's a matter of whether you're ready to do that. Whether it pays to expedite it, because you might just be happy by getting your application filed and letting the patent process just go along naturally as your business grows, as opposed to rushing it all and being forced into those decisions and additional expenditures so quickly.
Awesome. That's good advice. All right, Rich. Well, I think we've grilled you with everything that we've thought of. If anybody who's with us here live has any follow-up questions for Rich, please go ahead and drop them in the chat, which it looks like we do have a couple here.
Justin's, we have a question about Justin's asking whether or not a UK trademark will work for US brand registry. And I believe that they just removed that ability now where.
Yeah, that's about right. It has in the past, which is kind of like a strange loophole because trademarks are territorial. A UK trademark shouldn't work in the US, but for a while it has. And I can tell you, if you look up the requirements for brand registry, it will say, well, where do you want it? And then it will tell you what you need. So like if you said for US, it will say you need a US registered trademark. If you looked up UK, it will say a UK trademark or a European Union trademark. So it really does, it has to match in terms of the territory. And I'm going to predict that the people that got in with the UK trademark will be kicked out, just like they've slowly kicked out people that were in brand registry before they required a registered trademark. So,
Amazon's making a lot of changes here. And I think, some of these recent lawsuits are really pushing them to take more action on a lot of these legal issues because they're starting to see, more and more issues pop up when it comes to, litigation. So be ready for a lot of changes, fast and furious, I think, coming up here. So, Rich, any final advice, tips, anything you want to pass on to the audience that we maybe didn't cover here?
I guess I just want to underscore a couple of things that I said before. One is that if you're thinking you might ever want to protect it, if you're thinking you might ever want to get a patent, make that determination early, so that you don't lose the right, and then don't lose back. If you don't do it, then just go full forward and don't look back. And just, if you decided not to protect it, don't hesitate with your marketing. Just go out there and hit it hard. And then if you have a product with a distinctive look, do file design patent applications. Because like I said, Amazon has been deferring to design patents. And I can't tell you the problems I've had when a competitor has a design patent on something we would have said, like, you can't get a design patent on that. But now we're trying to convince Amazon that the patent office shouldn't have granted this design patent. And it's an argument that goes nowhere. So the bottom line is it pays to be the person with the design patent.
That's super interesting. That might shift the paradigm on what people are going to go for, patent wise. That's yep. Really interesting, at least in today's atmosphere on Amazon. That's interesting. All right, Rich, let people know how they can find you. Anything else you want to mention, websites, contact info, anything you want to mention at all, please go ahead and do that.
Okay. Yeah. And I would say if you want to learn more about the patent process, the American Bar Association asked me to write a book explaining to everyday people how patents work. And that's the ABA Consumer Guide to Obtaining a Patent. And you can find that on Amazon if you just search my name or ABA Consumer Guide to Obtaining a Patent. It's like $15 or so. And if you buy a copy, I appreciate it. I mean, I like, those are the only numbers I watch on Amazon, is watching a few book sales here and there. I make I think $1.50 each book, but it's just fun to see someone buying my book. So by all means, if it interests you, please buy that. And if you want to, if you need help with something related to patents and trademarks, you can go to my website, goldsteinpatentlaw.com. And there's a lot of great information there. There's a series of 6 videos that explain the patent process very well and have been watched tens of thousands of times. You could also contact my office and talk with my staff to see if it's a match for us to work together on whatever it is you have going on. And again, that's goldsteinpatentlaw.com. And I think that's about it. But I really appreciate you having me here, and I appreciate the opportunity to help Amazon sellers understand the stuff better, because I know it's confusing as can be.
Yeah, Rich. No, I learned a lot. I really appreciate it. It's always fun to have, you know, I'm more of like the marketing, you know, marketing's probably one of my strongest suits, of course, with the SEO, you know, over here. that's where I get my expertise from, but it's always great to have, you know, all the support on these subjects where, you know, we had insurance last week and things like, it's kind of these things that, you know, a lot of people aren't thinking about, but are really something you need to think about when it comes to your Amazon business. So really, really appreciate that. I learned a lot today. Hopefully everybody listening and watching feels the same way. So thanks again, Rich. Really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, no, my pleasure. And I'm happy to help. And whenever any of these opportunities come up. So, I would just put one last pitch out there to the audience. Anyone else who has a podcast, a webinar, or a stage, I'm passionate about getting this information out to Amazon sellers. So by all means, reach out to me with those opportunities.
Perfect, Rich. Thank you again. And guys, as usual, I know I mentioned it last week, but we're still kicking some butt on the podcast charts. We're doing really well, you know, beating some of the really established podcasts that have been out for years and years and years. You know, Rich was talking about checking his book. That's kind of my new obsession, is checking the podcast charts. So we really, really appreciate you guys tuning in. And if you can, mash on that subscribe button. And if you don't mind leaving a review and a rating, we really appreciate it. And also, you know, pass this on to your friends if you think they can get some value out of it. So thanks again, guys. And everybody who joins us live, as usual, we really, really appreciate it. And you guys are going to get to stick around for the bonus content after we stop the recording here. And we'll see you next time, guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rich. Bye, everyone.
Thanks for tuning in. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time for live Q&A and bonus content after the recording at sellerroundtable.com. Sponsored by the ultimate software tool for Amazon sales and growth, sellerseo.com, and amazingathome.com.